Welcome to the Dissertation Dive. This is a special podcast series where we dive into dissertations of scholars who completed their doctoral degrees in the past several years. As you know, the dissertation is the culminating experience of a doctoral journey and includes independent scholarship that is significant to the field. So I thought it'd be a great idea to dive into some exemplary dissertations. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Christopher Mellor, the author of the dissertation titled Studying Washout During Professional Socialization. Dr. Mellor, thank you for joining me on the Dissertation Dive.
Excited to be a part of the podcast. Always excited to talk to you. Throw out a shout out to Karen Goodrow for chairing my dissertation and putting up with me during that odd time. And again, just excited to be joining you.
Thanks, Chris. I'm really excited to have you on this series and kind of see where you're at in your career, what's your dissertation focused on. I remember running into you before you did your dissertation and kind of heard about your ideas back then and didn't really get to catch up since your dissertation to talk about how that went. So here we are to dive into that. For a big part of the interview, we'll look at your dissertation and hear from you about that. But can you first tell us what are you up to now in your career?
Currently, I am a third-year assistant professor at Adelphi University in Garden City, New York. I'm in the College of Education and Health Sciences. I teach elementary methods, tech and assessment, and then my research still revolves around socialization relative to my dissertation.
What about a little bit more about your background, and how did you end up pursuing a doctoral degree in physical education?
Yeah, so it's been an interesting pathway. Certainly, everything that University of Wyoming had to offer me put me in the right place to start. Mark Byra, Jane Dinkins, Tristan Wallhead, and of course, Karen Goodrow as well. It was amazing, and it really contributed to my education, I think, in a really meaningful way. I'm really forever grateful to them. Interesting enough, and I don't know if you were there for it, but Wyoming hosted an ASA a few years back. And I was able to join as a graduate assistant during my master's. It's part of the highlighter crew, if you remember that that group of people there. But we're kind of talking with professors there, it kind of seemed to be a real possibility. And I, again, felt really grateful that I was able to join that. After my master's at Wyoming, I wasn't completely sold on the idea, but yet I was still intrigued. I had the opportunity to be full-time faculty at Arkansas State as a professional lecturer. I believe that year I taught 13 classes, which was difficult, but I loved it. And I believe that I was able to contribute to that program in a positive way. So I think that kind of cemented the fact that maybe I was ready to start my PhD after
that. Wow, 13 classes. I always think of the heavy teaching load as being a 4-4, right? So that'd be eight classes a year, and I did that for 1 year and it was absolutely overwhelmed. So cannot imagine 13 classes, but you said you loved it, thankfully.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a great experience. I've always been, I think, kind of more teaching oriented than research oriented, and that's, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of that as a professional lecturer, so it kind of like gave me an opportunity to really develop my teaching when I didn't have to focus as much on research. Which was a good progression into the PhD, really.
Yeah. So you shared your some really important socialization experiences in the program at Wyoming, and it sounds would have been amazing timing to have the ASAP conference and a group of international scholars to connect with during your studies. So you must have looked, when you thought about doctoral programs, there were some good choices out there in the United States, maybe even abroad. How did you go about selecting a doctoral program that was right for you?
Yeah, so I selected the University of Alabama. It was hard not to go to Alabama's campus and not love that, fall in love right off the bat, really. But I kind of had known some of the research that they were doing there, Matt Kirner Smith stuff, and ended up being really an amazing experience. I kind of understood a little bit about the foundation of literature that they went over to start there. But that really that their program was allowing people to explore different lines of research and what they were most interested in. So I felt like it was best for me. And, you know, I was interested in socialization. So like taking a class from Matt Kirtner Smith on socialization was incredible. He's an amazing educator. And after my first year at Alabama, I actually made the hard decision to leave Alabama and join University of New Mexico and link back up with Dr. Goodrow. But it was kind of an amazing thing, really, to be involved in both those programs. Like, everybody has a different approach to doctoral education, but their approaches are different but very effective. And it kind of allowed me to have this unique holistic experience that I think a lot of people don't get in just one.
So you end up at New Mexico with Dr. Goodrow and the doctoral program there. You would have gotten involved in, I know she has a lab group, so you've got these lab meetings and things and coursework. What were some of the influential things at New Mexico that led to your research topic?
I think it really started with my thesis at Wyoming with Karen Goodrow. That was about teacher-coach role conflict. Certainly different things along the way, got me moving down that line. Kirtner Smith and Goodrow kind of assisting my understanding of the theory was great, and really fostering an appreciation for that, as well as just, you know, Kevin Richards with everything he's published around socialization has helped, and then being kind of a friend and mentor within that process really solidified and helped me come to the conclusion of what I might want to propose for the dissertation.
Yeah, so let's dive into that then. What were the research questions are kind of the broader focus of the study that you wanted to learn about?
Yeah, so I had two dissertations, relatively easy to explain together because they're about wash out and wash in, or in a different way, never washed in or washed in. I can explain that a little bit more as we go along here. The participant essentially was describing his experience in a PEAT program, what curriculum was most and least beneficial and why, and then drawing connections between the interactions that he had and the socialization path that he was on. So basically looking at washout from professional socialization and seeing what the kind of the precursors are to washout or adoption of that material.
Yeah, so interesting. This idea of washout, I'm really glad to talk about it because I know the socialization literature fairly well, you know, studied with Templin, but the washout is something I haven't had an opportunity to think about as much in a while. As you dove into the literature around that, what were some of the key kind of findings and important ways of understanding that topic?
Yeah, so there is a bit of literature out on washout. It is a little scarce, but there are some things that been listed on like why washout occurs. And they say that washout occurs just in organizational socialization, meaning a person's career, due to poor facilities, lack of equipment, lack of respect, maybe reality shock, marginalization, all things that contribute to washout once somebody starts their career. There's some other literature that kind of suggests that formal training is at a hard time. Has a hard time changing prior beliefs of a cult, like formed in acculturation. And thus, basically, the espoused pedagogy in PEAT is not going to be adopted because of what they learned in acculturation. I think that's kind of where I really started to dive into it because it didn't really sit with me very well. I was at all these like amazing programs, Wyoming, Alabama, Mexico, and I had kind of seen a lot of physical educators changed their orientation towards teaching. So I started to get a little bit interested in that because I'm saying, I don't know. Of course, sometimes a PEAT program might not be ready to battle acculturation, I suppose, so to speak. But another part of it was, I think, as you mentioned before, Richards, Templin, and Graver came out with analysis of socialization research. There's one line in there that stuck with me, and it was basically, in order for curriculum to wash out, it needs to first be washed. So the idea of this came from that, really. Wash in, what are the factors I am not considering in this phase? so often that washout is connected to a career, but not necessarily what we do in our peak programs. So how do I contribute to something never being washed in, or how have I won the mighty battle against acculturation to wash in material that will be implemented in a PE teacher's career?
Yeah. Thanks for that explanation of wash out, wash in. It's my first time really having an opportunity to think about the wash in perspective, and I think that adds a lot to the conversation. So what about your methods? How did you go about, you know, designing a study that would help you learn something about this topic?
Yeah, so we need to just know as much as possible. We want to take an approach where we were diving in as deep as possible. So we didn't want to go with multiple participants. We decided to do a single case study for both studies. Data was collected a few different ways, semi-structured interviews, unstructured interviews, email and text communication, artifacts. I think the interesting part of the methods was that one study was basically the troubles of that the pre-service teacher encountered and the positive experiences. So really had two sides of the coin that we are trying to figure out. And in some ways, the data could be collected all together, really. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of two different approaches, the difficulties and the positives that were happening there within his experiences.
And so it sounds like you had a in-depth kind of case study with a participant. Maybe you gave him a pseudonym or something like that. And this was divided into two studies that then represented one dissertation. Am I understanding that right?
That's right. Yep. That's correct.
Yeah. So a unique kind of format there too, then, in that you have two, you know, independent kind of chapters in your dissertation. Did you have a kind of a broader lit review section too, or how was the kind of dissertation document format?
Yeah, so it was, the literature review was relatively the same in some ways, just highlighting a little bit more of the positive things that we've seen within socialization, or the experiences that has allowed somebody to triumph, opposed to maybe subsequent struggles with socialization. So relatively the same as far as we used OST, occupational socialization theory, guiding both of those. The other thing that might have changed things a little bit was appreciative inquiry, which we used on the positive piece, and basically looks to take positive interactions within an organization or entity and use those to build a future, but also look at sustainability. And so it doesn't completely shy away from the struggles, but it kind of looks to transform the approach taken in the future. By no means was that a theoretical framework again, but it did influence the approach to the paper of the wash-in paper.
Right. Yeah. So I want to think about data collection, and I know data collection is challenging. It always is, but I think it is especially challenging in doctoral studies because maybe it's new, but even if it's not new, there's a lot riding on data collection to be able to graduate with your degree. Did you face any challenges, or how did that data collection process go for you?
Yeah, it was really tough. I mean, we were in the heart of COVID. We were shut down. I think some of the policies surrounding COVID in New Mexico at that time were pretty stringent. And so, you know, we were shut down. I might have been shut down myself, I say, for about 3 or 4 months. And we actually started with 4 studies. And kind of the logistics around 2 of them wasn't very practical during COVID. And so those kind of went away and we landed on 2. I think those 2 were relatively seamless because of Zoom. I would have loved to add to the studies with field notes, but again, with COVID and the red tape around that, it's hard to justify at that point. I think it didn't matter as much, being that the idea of the study was looking at his story, his perceptions. So I don't think it was necessarily imperative to complicate things during that time with observations and field notes. So while it was difficult and stuff, we had to make some adjustments. Without the field notes, it worked out pretty well, actually.
So once you had the data in hand, of course, you had to have a process to make meaning from it. How did you structure your data analysis?
Yeah, I had to be really intentional with the data analysis, being that we're kind of applying it to two sides of the coin, difficulties and the positive experiences. So I think it was tough because what do you do then with neutral cases when you're coding? Where does that fall into? And I think we sorted it out just fine, but it was definitely a process in having a very large data set. The unstructured interviews, there was 10 of those. And I can't remember how many off the top of my head, semi-structured, but it was kind of a lot of data. So sorting out what fit where was quite the process, being that we were working with one participant. I think overall that it was a traditional approach as far as like open coding, sorting data, actual coding, refining categories and theme development thereafter. But the process was just a bit different because of that two sides of it.
Yeah. So what about the findings? Can you talk a little bit about the most important findings from the study?
Yeah, so there's a couple across both of them. I think one of the things was that the participant was having a hard time with the totality of the spouse pedagogy. Now, some curriculum was so stringent that it demanded perfection in him. The participant was talking about needing to have back to the wall 100% of the time and never breaking that ever. And I think to him, it basically made him feel like he could never make a mistake. He talked about that similar to in a field experience, always being with like a very seasoned teacher. And, you know, do I have to be this perfect teacher coming right out? Like, can't I be a little bit more of a human and stuff? So I think it just taught me to kind of remind my students the importance of reflection and that there will never be that perfect lesson out there. Jane Jenkins talked about all the time in Wyoming that she'd been in the field for 20 years and she had two perfect lessons. We aren't creating perfect little pedagogy soldiers out here, and that you're allowed to be human and make mistakes, and just that we're going back to that reflection then after that. So the research, he also talked about that research itself wasn't necessarily resonating with him. He's having a hard time making a connection between what he saw in the gymnasium and PE and how research projects were organized. And that really wasn't something that he was taking forward with him. Another big one for difficulties that he experiences was having a lack of shared technical culture between faculty. It really didn't allow him to retain information. He said, you know, if faculty are up in the air about it, then so is he, and that he might not land on either side. And that type of curriculum might just fall to the wayside. On the positive side of things, I think one of the most important things that I saw and that I've taken into my own teaching was he said that he had a strong connection with faculty, but that his retention wasn't dependent on the content. It was dependent on the connection he had with his professor. So we all know that we understand that the better we know somebody, the better we can teach them. But I hadn't really thought that much about that the retention rates are complete or somewhat or completely, depending on who it is, dependent on that relationship between a student and the teacher. And not necessarily that if this is boring content, that I might lose students there. But if I have that relationship with them, that might not matter as much, that they might espouse that given our good relationship. And then he discussed a couple other things on field experience, positive field experiences, positive cooperating teachers, and using, student-to-student interaction as a reflection tool. And that kind of came up because of COVID, and we weren't doing that as much. But because of COVID and Zoom and how much we started to utilize that their interactions together kind of actually increased when we were not together.
Wow. So really interesting and impactful findings. And I think that speaks to the value that in-depth studies with a small group of participants can bring, just as, you know, studies with large numbers can add value too. But you brought out some nuance there in terms of the way the participant experience, education, and the relationship part really hits home to me, with that being very important. When you got through the findings, was there anything that came out of that process that maybe was surprising or unexpected for you?
I think for you, like you just said, that relationship piece, always knew that it was important and stuff. And as I'm continuing on and learning more about like culturally relevant pedagogy and things of that nature, thinking about the relationship and how much I know about my students, it wasn't that surprising, but a bit unexpected that his retention was so dependent on the relationship he had with his professor. So I always thought like, oh, I'm going to be teaching lesson planning today. This is going to be thrilling. And that, you know, maybe this is one of the reasons why students don't continue the lesson plan. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. But that not necessarily because this might be not as engaging of a lesson, that doesn't mean necessarily that the student won't espouse this pedagogy, especially given the fact that I hope that, and I try to have a good relationship with students, learn as much as possible about them.
Yeah. So do you feel like there was kind of a take-home message from your dissertation? I know you're at Adelphi now and doing work as an educator. So is there something that really is, that stands out as being impactful?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky to be at Adelphi, and we're certainly thinking about that lack of shared technical culture quite a bit. And that we're making sure that we as colleagues are on the same page as much as possible with major content. Everybody has a different approach and might like different models more than another. But as far as major take-home messages, we're making sure that we're on the same page. And that's not necessarily a product of these dissertations, but certainly a product of being in a very progressive department. But I think the other part, and kind of, you know, this is the same thing that I've been saying before, but get to know your pre-service teachers as much as you can. It's so incredibly important to be able to have a good relationship, have an understanding of what their culture is like, and sharing your own.
Yeah, yeah. And it's tricky too, because that those types of outcomes don't show up well in like maybe an annual review. In fact, if you have bad relationships with your students, that might come out. But having a positive, it's not something we're good at recognizing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had to go back and do your dissertation over again, would you do it differently?
I think I would maybe try to learn more about appreciative inquiry and kind of seeing how that's structured maybe across different subject matters and different fields and stuff. There's a fair number of people, Shane Pill, that uses appreciative inquiry quite a bit. And I've definitely drawn my understanding from that, but I think that's really the only thing I would change. I don't think I would change a whole lot. Every research project is a process, and you get better as you go along and stuff. And it was really just a good learning experience, to transition to Adelphi after that. So,
yeah. So how has this impacted your career so far? Have you, disseminated the research findings and things like that?
As far as publishing?
Yeah.
No, these are not published yet, actually. Looking to continue to work on this and the subject matter. And hopefully they will be before too long. I think it's impacted my career significantly. I think I've always been teacher-centered, and again, as I said before, really interested in teaching. So I wanted my research to mimic that as much as possible. What could I do better, really? And that's kind of, again, why part of this research came out. That's definitely impacted the way I've approached working with students.
And that's one I kind of zeroed in on publishing, but one of the things that I'm learning through this podcast and always want to lift up is you know, publishing is a great way to disseminate findings, but there's a lot of ways. Presentations is an obvious one, but curriculum change opportunities is an obvious one. And there's a variety of ways that people can disseminate in ways that are appropriate for their career stage and just kind of where they're at. So I think that impacting your teaching is a really good example. What's next for you? Will you continue, you know, how do you plan to stay connected to this line of research?
Yeah, certainly when I continue on, I mean, this is one pre-service teacher. So what's other pre-service teachers going to say? Again, perhaps the idea of engaging topics is more prevalent in other students, and that maybe the connection with the professor is not as important. You know, it would be interesting to see what other people say about their retention and their lack thereof. So I think continuing on with a few of these, and then maybe also trying to do something conceptual on the ways of that we build out this idea of washout. There's obviously been studies done before, but we have very little knowledge surrounding wash in. There has been certainly studies that people have done that have looked at the how successful their programs are from a lot of different standpoints, but building out this idea further into professional socialization of looking at more of a long-term process opposed to something that just happens, right, in organizational socialization.
Yeah. So if you think about your dissertation, there's people who are now in that phase of doing a dissertation or maybe just thinking about getting into a doctoral program even. What advice would you give someone who's pursuing this career path and perhaps facing some challenges with it?
Yeah, I'd say work on it incrementally, step by step, stages of work. It is a lot of work. I think there's no one saying that there needs to be an immense amount of work being done in one day. Plan short 2-3 hour segments of work, stay consistent with that process, and it'll get done. I thought sometimes I was like, I'm gonna work on my dissertation for 8 hours today. No, I'm not. Probably would not like the subject matter as much if I was trying to stuff it all in. So I would say go step by step. It's a process and it's a long process, but incrementally.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. You can't cram your dissertation
no.
as much as you might try. So you ended up with a really interesting study. I'm really glad to kind of catch up on it, learn about it a little bit here. I've reached the end of the questions that I have, but are there other things that you may want to share about your dissertation or more broadly before we finish here today?
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you again for participating in the dissertation dive, and I look forward to crossing paths with you out in the field somewhere.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Moore.